Over DC Diversity Dive, a podcast in which our diversity and inclusion team aim to recognize and support cultural practices and celebrations. Delta Capita embraces and celebrates equality and diversity. It takes the steps necessary to ensure these values are recognized. For example, through the work of our Diversity and Inclusion Committee and fostering diverse thought. Women's History Month is an annual observance held in March to celebrate and recognize the contributions, achievements, and struggles of women throughout history. The event traces its origins back to International Women's Day, which was first observed in the early 20th century and later expanded into a month-long celebration in many countries. Today, we look to discuss some of the challenges women face and how to embody our DC value of collaborating for better outcomes. With our guest speakers, Sarah Carver, Head of Retail Banking, Wealth and Insurance, and Larissa Cowell, CNM Vice President, and Bancham Taneja, Regional Head of India. Welcome, everybody. The first question to Larissa. Women's History Month gives us the opportunity to explain the role of women looking backward and what it means looking forward. When you look back in history, who are the female leaders who inspire you and why?
Oh gosh, there is just so many and I wish I could name them all. But to name a few, Ada Lovelace, the first computer programmer of the 1800s, who actually never got recognition for what she did whilst living, just simply due to being a woman. Ruth Bader Ginsburg, the second woman in the Supreme Court, who successfully fought against gender discrimination throughout her entire career and did such amazing things. A newer one, but Sheryl Sandberg, former Facebook COO, author of Lean In, Women, Work and the Will to Lead, absolutely amazing book. I read it 5 years in a row in my early career and it was instrumental and it's so, so helpful. I recommend it to anybody who can get their hands on that book. Madam C.J. Walker, the first female millionaire, another newer one, Anne Boden, founder of Starling Bank and recent author of Female Founders Playbook, another brilliant book I would recommend. I mean, the suffragettes, right? The women who fought for women to vote in the UK, Margaret Thatcher and all the women who had to be iron-like first, so today we can be softer in approach, should we choose to be. All the women that we might not know by name that stood up for something, dared to be bold, loudly, quietly, in both big and small ways. Women who advocate for change are the kind of women that inspire me the most, both out in the open, but also behind closed doors. The women whose shoulders we stand on and the women who are doing those things in the present have some still, I'm sure, yet to receive their flowers for it. The trailblazers, the disruptors, the women who have been and still are looked upon as nuisances to the ways of civilized society, but the heroes of today and will be the heroes of the future. And I think what's abundantly clear is in order for change to actually be instigated and to take place, there has to be a period of discomfort. So I think the writing's on the wall, really, in that to challenge the status quo, we must get comfortable with being uncomfortable, right? All those fabulous women that have come before us certainly had to. And with that said, I think, you know, we've come such a long way, such a long way in the way women are perceived in everyday society. And I think a really simple example of this that, you know, might give us a bit of a giggle, but I think everyone can relate to it is Disney films. I mean, I grew up watching Cinderella, Snow White, Sleeping Beauty, Three Princesses, waiting for Prince Charming to come along and save them. And, you know, this was the norm at that point. This is the way women were projected in society. And this is what little girls and little boys were fed as the norm. A woman who's gentle, reserved, and perhaps needing to be saved. And I actually had a really great chat with Sarah yesterday about this. And I think, Sarah, did you want to potentially chime in on your example? Because I just thought it was amazing.
Yeah, I mean, we were watching a film a couple of weekends ago with the kids. And I just thought Mary Poppins, nice, sweet film to put on with the kids. And in the opening song, Mr. Banks is there. I've never, ever noticed it. So I've seen this film like probably 5 times. And it's just Mr. Banks saying this, it's the age of men. I'm the lord of my castle and I treat my subjects, servants, children and wife
with a firm but gentle hand. And my little boy looked over at me and I was just thinking, gosh, what have I put on?
And it's just one of those moments where, exactly as you say, Larissa, you don't even notice some of the stuff that, and I grew up with that film, watching that. I mean, it was the original version. And yeah, it was just shocking that I've never, ever noticed that line was in there. So I think it's just interesting seeing how much things have changed. And obviously, that's a tongue-in-cheek song, even in that film. But it was just interesting seeing the boy's reaction to it.
Yeah, I think whether I speak of local Hindi movies or the Indian film industry or even Hollywood for that matter, have a way of typecasting women the way they're projected. Like, very few movies have been inspirational from a women's perspective to showcase their merit or achievements in a particular field. I can count probably a handful of movies which have showcased them beyond being, you know, a beautiful princess waiting for a prince charming. I guess that's a society we have grown up in, but I can see the change coming through. I've never seen a movie which has been made to share the success of a woman entrepreneur or a business leader. So I think the society, as Larissa said, is changing. The goalposts are moving consistently. And hopefully we'll see better content coming from cinema makers in the coming years.
Absolutely agree. We need change there. And I can see there are female directors and producers coming in. And like that movie where they explained the three female mathematicians who were involved in the calculations that were done for the first rocket to the moon in 1969.
Yeah, one of the people I follow on Instagram is Reese Witherspoon. He set up Hello Sunshine, and it's all around elevating women's voices and telling the stories in films of women's voices that perhaps haven't always been covered. So it's definitely changing. I still think there's room for improvement. Maybe you go into a supermarket and you still see all of the boys' clothing saying, I'm going to be a superhero, I'm going to go to space on a space rocket. And the girls' outfits are often saying, I'm a pretty princess, daddy's a little girl. And I think there's still room to be done by just the base messages that we tell children from an early age in society about what they are and what their opportunities are.
Absolutely. That is so true, Sarah. And like, even from an adult perspective, right? You know, I think we touched on that as well. The shower gels, you know, for women, yeah. It's Snow Fairy and Vanilla Paradise. And I quite like smelling like Vanilla Paradise, but I also would like to consider myself as sharp and hydro-focused, and the things that see on the men's shower gels. And I think it's funny, but when we actually think about it, it's those little insignificant things, when accumulated, actually have a significant impact on, one, the way women feel about themselves, but then how they're also perceived. So yeah, I think we've come a long way, which is fabulous, but there's still a way to go. Yeah.
I'll also add that, you know, with the age of social media and access to, like what Sarah mentioned, she follows a few people on Instagram. Like, I'm not so much on social media except probably YouTube. And I was doing a course last year, and we were supposed to look at few personalities who made an impact. They were from the political field, social field, education, business. And one of the personalities which we had to look at and see how she built her career was Indra Nooyi, the ex-CEO of Pepsi. And her story is really, really encouraging and inspiring to a lot of people, because first of all, she comes from, you know, India, where at the time she started working, it wasn't deemed necessary to have a career as a woman. So she broke the stereotype of being a lady in the corporate world, then went on to become the CEO of Pepsi, and has had positions which are far greater in value and in eminence at that of her husband's as well. And she narrated a story in a town hall she was having with a fellow leader in the industry, where she's Indra Nooyi, the CEO, when she's in the Pepsi office. But when she reaches home, her mom expects her to have milk sorted for the home, eggs sorted for the home. The whole kitchen is still her responsibility. So how she's overcome those stereotypes, still managed a home, and still managed to run Pepsi for the longest time. It's one of the most inspiring stories I heard.
And I remember one of her talks, and I just picked up on one line. She said, you can't have it all. You know, women cannot have it all. You just have to get on with whatever you can do without 100% this perfection. It all goes down to the stereotypes, you know. We don't need to be perfect and nicely dressed and everything. We can just try and all everything and see how we get on. Okay, I'll move on to the second question, which is, Sarah, I'll start by asking you. So we asked you about famous women who inspired you. How about inspirational women you've met in your own life? maybe it was a teacher or a female family member or a work colleague. Who was it and how did they make a difference in your life?
My really simple one here is my mum. I always get asked where I learned to negotiate and people always assume it was from my dad or a male figure in my life. And my roles have always been quite commercially driven. And all of that is from my mum, who's like an inherent wheeler dealer, but in the best way, in the sense as she will work out and understand what the other person is looking for and makes it a mutually agreeable negotiation where everyone wins. So for me, I learn loads from her. And also just aside from kind of negotiation and peace, just kind of the approach of throw yourself into anything and try your hand at literally anything. So she was the one that taught me how to paint and polyfill and knock down walls when I was doing my house renovation. And also just to be completely fearless. I remember so vividly being 10 years old and we'd just moved house and there was 2 6-foot-4 probably plus guys in our garden with guns who were shooting, who'd come across and into our garden and were shooting birds. And she just ran out with no fear, no much consideration and just gave them what for. And it was amazing to watch these two burly, relatively aggressive guys suddenly cowering in front of my 5-foot-4 mum and apologizing. So just to kind of throw yourself into anything, be fearless. I've learned so much from her.
I guess moms are role models for little daughters. That's a good point. So we have to empower overcoming generation.
I agree with Sarah on this one. Growing up as a female role model, it was my mom. I'll go back to the fact that, you know, culturally where I come from, it wasn't deemed necessary for a woman to have a career. My mom started working in 1974. She worked for 38 years in a single organization. And talk about role typecasting, she joined the Government of India offices as a stenographer because that was the role which was open for women. But she grew to the rank of a director within the government and her name was in the Gazette of India as well. So, you know, the way she scaled her career from early 70s when it was not deemed necessary or it wasn't required, brought up a whole, you know, family, took her family along with the career, I think is an inspiration. Other person I do want to call out is my wife. I see her hustling between multiple jobs and roles. She flies for British Airways. She runs her own consulting firm in fashion and image consulting. So she's hustling every day as well. So I've had the privilege of being very close to two powerful women, you know, who have done wonders for their own career. So yeah, it's for me, it's my mum and my wife as of now.
That's hugely inspirational.
They sound phenomenal. Excellent.
Just to pick up on Pansha's point on I've got two little boys and I get the standard thing of mum guilt of working different hours and missing certain things. I remember vividly missing a teddy bear's picnic for one of my little boys and feeling loads of guilt. But then I have other moments where they say things and then we're watching, I don't know, Peppa Pig back in the day and it's something where it was like, oh, the dad goes off to work. And he said, well, the mums go off to work too. Mummies work just as hard. And was really quite annoyed at what he was watching. I think I feel a real responsibility as a woman to also bring up the next generation of boys to consider and learn from the mistakes of the past and the typecasting that Pansha referred to and just be the role models and the allies alongside. I think that's kind of a big, that's really important to me.
I'll add to that, Sarah, you know, to the point you made that the mums are supposed to stay at home or not work late.
Totally.
COVID has changed that perspective, I would say, to a certain extent. I used to work for a bank before I joined DC and I had long hours, as you can imagine, and I was hardly home. And so my wife also started juggling multiple things just before COVID, during COVID and after COVID. And I became more of a work from home dad. So now when I step out to work, like I've come in the evening to the office today now to record this podcast, my son was asking, where are you going and why are you going? Why can't you work from home? So he's gotten so used to the idea of me working from home that they don't like it if I step out often and go to office. So I have to be back home in time, spend time with them. And I think it's very important that kids see both sides of it. Everybody's hustling and it's not just a single parent's hustle. I think you have different careers and you manage them differently. So it's very important that your kids see that and are brought up in the right way.
Awareness right from the beginning.
Yeah.
The role of women in business has evolved greatly over the past 50 years. During your career, what changes have you yourself observed affecting women in the workplace?
There were certain roles women were typecast for, stenographers, executive assistants, secretaries. So when I joined the workforce, it was late 90s, things started to change. You would see women doing much more than that. Television had just evolved in India. So you saw a lot of news anchors or journalists who were women, and it was an evolution. Now, when a fast track to 2024, it's about 26 years I've been working. I have seen a complete metamorphosis in terms of the careers women choose as well. I've had the privilege of reporting. My bosses have been mostly women. So I've never had a problem in having reporting lines to women. So I've reported to CFOs in previous organizations, which were women. I've had managing directors in previous organizations, which were women. So you can clearly see that talent, if nurtured and given the opportunity, can rise irrespective of gender. And so I've seen that change. Now, no more typecast roles. I think women come in, like Larissa said, sharp, focused, and are ready to make a mark in any field they go into.
Good to hear. That's very positive.
I think that's probably just a less open bias. One of the things that I was exposed to was being told I had been picked for a client meeting as the eye candy, not to really worry about preparing too much from a content perspective, which, having done a maths and business degree and read up all night around the subject matter that we're going to go in and present on, was a somewhat disappointing message to hear. And I think some of that stuff just wouldn't happen today. I think the other thing I've observed is actually the women leaders have also evolved. I think observationally, when I first entered the workspace, a lot of the women leaders in senior positions that I was kind of seeing had somewhat kind of almost evolved into being a version of a male leader and were trying to replicate some of those behaviors and be perhaps very outspoken and quite aggressive sometimes, as opposed to, I think what I see now is a real diversity in the types of female leaders and everyone kind of very much being themselves, as opposed to having to adopt certain traits and behaviors in order to be successful. So that's one of the most, I think, positive things I've seen evolve.
Yeah, I'd have to really agree with that one, Sarah. I think, you know, the women before, bless them, right, that they had no choice maybe to feel like they had to adopt that kind of presence. Whereas now I think we've progressed in great ways where we have challenged that bias, and now it's okay to have emotional intelligence and be a little bit more kind and a bit more friendly, which is really, really positive, because those characteristics are just so important and really, really do enhance leadership.
Couldn't agree more.
What Sarah said about women sort of showing traits like men leaders, I think it's changing now. Women are getting comfortable in their own skin and they are behaving like women leaders, not replicating what men would do. And to the point Larissa made in terms of having that emotional quotient to work is helpful, I think. And a diverse and a different voice is always required at the table. When we started DC in India, I had two female managers working in CLM. And they chose to pursue their career outside of DC. And then at that point of time, I could not find female talent and I had to hire men. And now I tell Soumya, who's our HR manager, that the next manager has to be a female candidate, because I need diversity on the table. I need to hear different opinions. And we try very hard from a meritocracy perspective and from a gender perspective to go for that kind of a talent. But sometimes it's possible, sometimes it's not. But yeah, I think diversity in any conversation is a much needed aspect, and women do bring that to the table.
And we know that in AI learning models, we need diverse input. And that's one of the fields which everybody talks about, having diversity in anything that's to do with the machine learning, the AI learning, to put diverse data in there, have diversity in thought. And also the point about women can now bring their authentic self to the table. I think that's an important point. How can men in leadership positions be effective allies and advocates for gender equality in finance? And what role do you believe they should play in advancing the cause? Over to you, Larissa.
Oh, this is a good one. And I'm probably going to choose a bit of a taboo subject, but I think going with the theme that we've had, right, I hope that's challenging the status quo by choosing something that we perhaps might all feel slightly uncomfortable with in some ways. For me, I'd go with, if I had to choose just one amongst many, it would be challenging the likability penalty. And I think what I mean by that is what we see really, that when a man is successful, his peers often like him more. When a woman is equally as successful, both men and women often like her less. And if a woman's competent, she doesn't seem nice. She doesn't seem nice enough or likable enough. But if she's too nice, then she's considered less competent overall. And I think that bias itself surfaces in the way women are described, both in passing, but also, you know, quite significantly in performance reviews. So if there's a woman who's deemed as quite assertive or driven and speaks very directly when promoting her ideas, she can be called aggressive or too ambitious and even sometimes ingenuine. Where if a man does the same thing, that might be deemed as confident and strong. So I think what men's voices can really do, particularly at that senior level as well, is challenge the status quo and not undermine the power of their voice. And I think an example of the way they could just do that quite simply is ask for actual key examples of those behaviours and then perhaps offer a different take on it. So is she aggressive or is she driven? Is she bossy or is she influential? Is she not genuine? Or fake, or is it actually that she's polished, poised, and well prepared? That's what I'd say.
I couldn't agree more with that. I think the other thing I would add is accept and welcome the differences. I think you often, there has just by definition been more men around the table in the last 50 years in meetings. And I think the brilliant thing that women bring is diversity of thought and different ways of looking at things, which are sometimes completely alternative to how others in the room might be speaking. So I think it's welcoming that, and rather than finding that kind of, oh, why is that woman going to that level of detail on that specific point, and thinking, oh, that's really interesting that they're thinking about it differently. There was a really amazing thing I saw years ago. I think it was a Japanese psychologist, and it was a picture of an aquarium, and men looked at it for 3 seconds and women looked at it for 3 seconds, and they took away completely different things. The men saw one specific thing and could describe that in amazing detail, whereas the women could describe that, but not to the same level of detail, but had seen 7 other things in the picture because they were looking at the broader thing. It really has stuck with me over the years. And I think that if we can harness that, how brilliant. But I think sometimes it's seen as, why are they talking about that? Or that seems to be a different thing. So I think just really welcoming that diversity of thought and making sure if there is perhaps and this goes for men and women, but if there isn't someone speaking up in a meeting, say, X person, what do you think about that? And just trying to bring everyone's ideas and thoughts in always.
That's good. Make a space for everybody to say what they need to say.
Yes. Yeah. I'd completely agree. I think that was such a brilliant point. And it makes me think about, you know, also mentorship, right? And actually providing equal access. So equal access to rooms and networks and people, so we can kind of share and collaborate that diversity, which I think oftentimes women don't have. So I think another thing for, you know, perhaps men and then what they can do to challenge it and be an advocate is actually mentor women, give them that different perspective, but then also learn that different perspective as well in reverse mentorship. And, you know, sometimes I think women probably miss out on that sometimes. And maybe something men can obviously do to do that is, if you were comfortable with going for dinner with a woman, then perhaps go for breakfast, right? But it's finding those opportunities to make sure that we're sharing, really.
The phrase that you're talking about, mentors and sponsors, the phrase that I heard yesterday at a women's networking event was that women look for mentors, but men look for sponsors. So I think it's also making sure that your board of directors have mentors, sponsors, and coaches.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think there's such a key difference, right? It's knowing how to differentiate the two. A sponsor is defined as someone who will advocate for you in rooms you're not in and say positive things about the work you're doing, where a mentor is actually sitting down with you and helping you solve problems. And yeah, I think both are equally as important.
I would say, agnostic of the gender, any person in a leadership position should play an effective mentoring and advocacy role to the women talent. I have seen a lot of times, especially in the Indian context, that women resign or are made to resign. It's not just men in leadership position. I think it's men at home as well. It's also families at home because they sometimes resign under pressure to take care of the family. I think all of them collectively need to come forward and support the career. And I've seen a lot of women resign at a very early stage of career, then try to join back, and they find it struggle because they've had a long break and are unable to kind of re-accelerate in their career. So it's not just in leadership position. I think men at home, family members, they all need to be effective allies and supporters of women trying to make careers.
Yeah, good point. So we're looking for education and awareness. Let's look at the future. Here's a big question. What are your predictions for the future of women in various aspects of society? For example, the arts and politics, as well as business.
I think across kind of all industries, we're seeing more and more representation of women. I mean, looking at LinkedIn every other day, I seem to see a newly promoted CEO of a company or a senior director. So I think we're just going to see that across the board. And I don't think that's tokenism and a woman being promoted because they're female. I think there's a much wider recognition of female leaders. So I think we'll see that just a lot more, just women rising through the ranks and that support from the mentorship that has happened over the past decade, 20 years to start preparing female leaders. And I think we'll just see so many more in those roles. I think the question that opens for me, and this piggybacks kind of perfectly from what Pansham just said, is what does that mean for the unit? And I think this is where we almost need to forget gender and think about just people. And I think that's going to be the really interesting thing going forward, is how we run collectively as people, our homes, families. And I think it will need to be much less focused on gender and much more focused on the different roles and the teaming that needs to happen. Because I think as we see that, and as women continue to rise, I think we used to see a decade ago, lots of women, for example, fall out of the workforce when they had children. And I think we're seeing that less and less. But what that means is there's still all of these jobs to be done, and still it's a lot of work, and how we as society collectively come together and operate more as a kind of tribe supporting each other, as opposed to those gender roles that perhaps were so present in previous decades.
I'll add a different perspective to this, and I've been thinking about this a lot. Like, we've seen a surge in women in sports. Like, there were individual sports like tennis, which obviously had a following. But we've all of late seen in football, a lot of women's football and a lot of women's cricket in India as well. But I don't see, from a gender perspective, women supporting it. If you look at the viewership, if you look at the in-stadia viewership, it's more men. And I think this is where women need to come out in support of their own, to say, yeah, you've chosen a different career and we don't watch sport, but we will come and support you. It goes back to the earlier point. If few women have chosen to choose sport as a career, I think we need more women out there to be supporting them in terms of whether it is financial fair play, whether it is just viewership. A lot needs to be done in that area. And that's what I feel the future of this sort of society should look like.
I agree with you. And in England, we can see that changing slowly by having women's football matches in the stadiums now, and the stadiums are fully selling out. I'm not sure about the gender in proportions in the audience, but they are selling out. Yeah, so we're getting there slowly, but that's a good point. Now, thank you very much. That's been a really interesting conversation. And I would now end with our normal rapid fire questions. And I'll be starting with Sarah to start with. What is something that people misunderstand about you?
Ooh, probably that because, well, certainly at DC, my role is quite commercially focused. So probably that I'm kind of hard-nosed and focused, but I'm actually just a total teddy bear when it actually comes down to it.
What are the best and worst pieces of career advice you have received?
Worst is probably I once got told I should be less happy and less positive. Because I tend to be a fixer and I tend to try and come at it. Problems with, don't worry, this is what we're going to do about it. And I just realised, and that it really taught me really think about whether you respect the person that's giving you the advice and should you truly be listening to it, as opposed to just accepting all advice as equal. And then probably best to really question every day, are the things that you're doing and spending your time on really getting you to the goal you're trying to achieve? Or is your day being taken over by random other things in the diary? So I often sense check that. and really query, am I spending my time on the things that get me to that goal? And that can be within a day, it can be within a week, it can be within a year, but I'm very mindful about what I spend my time on.
What does all the DC value, collaborate for better outcomes, mean to you?
Probably, I mean, exactly that. Always working together. I think our operating model is set up kind of really well to support each other and work across different areas of the business, whether that's countries or whether that's kind of domain areas. But probably just to help people, even when it's not relevant to your piece and it's not benefiting you, just to be a good citizen and kind of help your colleagues, even when it's not kind of relevant to your specific thing or your specific deal. Because I think that kind of pay it forward concept is a positive one to kind of put in place.
And over to you, Pancham, with the same three questions. What is something that people misunderstand about you?
I'm a very upfront person. Like I speak honestly and plainly. People perceive that as arrogance at time. And in social gatherings, when I meet somebody for the first time, I'm not very chirpy and I'm not very talkative. So that's also perceived as arrogance or being full of himself, whereas I'm not like that. And in terms of best and the worst pieces of career advice, I'll go for the best first. This was my HR manager long ago when I was coming up my career curve. He says, knowledge is your friend, invest in yourself, whether it is through degrees, diplomas, doesn't matter. Keep reading, keep honing yourself and make a better person of yourself every day. And I think that has stood with me for almost 20 years. And whichever forum I go to when I meet youngsters, I pass it on now because I've never found anything better than having immense knowledge about a lot of things. Worst advice has been that somebody once told me that I don't think you can run a business and you can be an entrepreneur. And this is in a personal setting, not a career sort of a conversation. And I still remember it. This was way back in 06, 07. I took it personally and I said, I will prove you wrong someday. And I've managed portfolios or parts of businesses and I'm managing DC in India. So I think in a very nice and quiet way, I've proved that person wrong. DC value of collaborate for better outcomes. I think it is collective in everything we do. Collective celebration if we do well and collective sort of hands-up approach if we fail in doing so. So again, I'll use an idiom, probably it's typecast. It says, success has many fathers, failure has none. I think what this means is that we do everything collectively. We share success and we share failures as well. So this is what it means to me.
Over to you, Larissa, with the same three questions.
What do people misunderstand about me? Perhaps on behalf of a lot of women in corporate careers, I'm probably considered to be extremely ambitious. I think I definitely do have lofty career ambitions, to be honest. But I also don't think that comes second to wanting to be a good person, kind and approachable. That's always what I lead with first and always will. The second one, what are the best and worst pieces of career advice I've received? Oh gosh, I'd probably say the worst, and it's a bit of a taboo one again, love to challenge the status quo, is to avoid politics. I actually think that's really bad advice. I think instead the advice should be to navigate politics in an inclusive way, not a self-serving way, because I think politics is something that we all have to face and we can't shy away from. I think the best career advice was recently actually in the leadership development program throughout 2023. And it really just took me aback because I'd never heard advice like this before, but it was when dealing with lots of different stakeholders and some of the difficulties that come with that, the best leader will take promotion out of it for a moment, which is sometimes hard to do. Look at it from a holistic perspective and understand what each person wants. And if you can marry those up, you've won, right? And that kind of brings me on to the third one quite nicely, really. What does our DC value, collaborate for better outcomes, mean? That's exactly what it means to me. I think that, you know, it's always at the core, it's always team, it's always people. And if you can get everyone together and get everyone aligned and try your very best, which isn't always easy, to give people what they want or at least understand what they want out of something, you are likely to deliver on what it is you need to deliver on.
Thank you. So a big thank you to Larissa, Sarah and Pancham for their insightful responses, for sharing their experiences and thoughts associated with Women's History Month. These conversations are vital to how we prioritize encouraging discussions on equality and equity in the workplace. Thank you all for listening to this discussion. And please look out for more content from Delta Capital or website
deltacapital.com or our LinkedIn page, and lastly, over Instagram @delta.capital.